Say a few more things and we'll do some practice together. We may have adequate motivation for working with, for trying to work with anger, find new ways of working with anger. This is really encouraged in the Buddhist tradition to get clear on the necessity of this work. And the suttas, the kind of discourses of the Buddha are lots of allusions to the importance of this kind of theme. And in Buddhist history, you see people saying very kind of dramatic things that are intended to motivate us, rally us to work with this theme. And so here's one famous example. Is it a little boomy or something? That sounds okay? Okay. So this is Shantideva, a guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life, which is the kind of core text in the Tibetan tradition. Shantideva says, "Good works gathered in a thousand ages, such as deeds of generosity or offerings to the blissful ones, a single flash of anger shatters them. No evil is there similar to anger, no austerity to be compared with patience. Steep yourself, therefore, in patience, in all ways, urgently, with zeal." Now that's a pretty dramatic kind of statement, yeah. And I see it very much as a kind of rallying cry to make this a part of our practice, yeah. And in that dramatic phrase of a single flash of anger shatters all this, you know, good deeds, yeah. But maybe that's overstating it a bit, yeah. But at the same time, we probably know those experiences where somebody gets real angry with us, and it changes things in an important way, you know? And it's like, I'm thinking about it. It was a co-worker and somebody who I had a really, a nice kind of cordial, friendly relationship. We sat close to one another, and there was a single kind of burst of some real aggression from him. I don't remember exactly what it was. There was no conflict or something, but he did something, or say it was that he said something that I could really feel the anger. And on the one hand, it's not a big deal, yeah. But if I'm really honest with myself, it did change how that it changed that relationship. It actually shifted things because we want to feel safe in the presence of others. That is a deep wish. And it's a very beautiful inspiration to practice so that we might be safe for others, that we can be safe for them. And when I started practicing, I heard something like that, like it was maybe Upandita, Burmese monk, who described his own aspiration for to be a kind of refuge for people, where we could trust his intention towards non-harming so deeply that there's a kind of radical safety. And I was moved by that, and one of the intentions that animated my practice is to become safer and safer for others, and to do that, to really be safer and safer for others, we need to digest our own anger. We need to digest that. Because if we don't, it's in the field. It's like a latent potential. It may not be there, but it's in the background. Yeah. And so part of my practice has been to begin a process of transformation, of changing something, so that anger is less likely to arise in the first place. Now, we can't control what arises, right? In the same way a sound arises and we hear something, anger arises and we feel something, we can't fight with that. Does that make sense? We can't fight with that, the arising of anger. That is not a fight one could win. And it gets us pitted against ourselves, which is not helpful. Yeah. We're not trying to do that. But we are, over the long term, trying to water the seeds of non-harming and to begin to drain some of the charge from anger. And when we do that, we become safer and safer for others. We become safer for our, partners, loved ones, co-workers, strangers, students. So it's a gradual process of working through all of those pressure points in me where anger is a potential reaction. It's like we have like soft spots, or hard spots, probably better. Hard spots, different places, right? And if it gets pressed in just the wrong way, there's anger, And that erodes some of the safety that's possible. So part of our inspiration for practice may be that we want to offer safety to others. Like that's something we want to do. I want to be safe for others. And I know, in my own life, teaching meditation, it feels almost like a moral responsibility for me to do that work the best I can. Imperfectly, for sure, but to do that work, to take anger seriously. And so this is some of our aspiration, and it's good to be really clear about that, not to hate anger or hate ourselves for feeling it, but to be very clear on this causes suffering, and it's a worthwhile goal of my spiritual practice. Now, a couple points. The Dalai Lama says, who's quite clear about the destructive force of anger, he does say that anger sometimes can have useful ends, in the sense that it motivates us to compassion and action, maybe to address injustice, But he says that hatred is can only ever destroy us. When anger hardens into a kind of hatred, that's never useful for us or others. And so he allows a little bit of space for anger, probably not much. He's pretty clear about it. But he allows a little space for it. And I've seen that, you know, especially around social justice, sometimes it does feel like there's some anger that's productive in motivating people to redress injustice. But for the most part, I think we need to take a pretty skeptical attitude towards our anger. And what I want to do is for us all to individually kind of reflect a bit on our style of anger, because it will vary person to person quite a bit. And for us to reflect what would more freedom in the realm of anger look like for us. And like, what would it look like for me to have more freedom in this realm? Because as I said, we, you know, some of us are going to be more on the explosive side, some of us are going to be more on the suppressive, internalizing side. And the path for those two people is different. It's really different. I remember I used to conduct psychotherapy, and there was one client who I saw when I was just being trained. I was an intern, and for her, anger was very dangerous, and to actually experience it. She was much more on the suppressive side. To experience it was very destabilizing for her, frightening. She was really, you could feel her energy was so inward and closed, and she was really not assertive in a lot of ways that are important, I think. And I remember toward the end of, you know, it was about 8 months of meeting. It was when I was discussing that I was leaving, and the therapy was going to have to end. She knew from the beginning that I was an intern and would be leaving. But then that time came, and so a month out, I said, "I'm going to be leaving." And her response was anger. And, you know, a lot of sadness, but anger too. And I remember feeling really happy for her that she was angry, and feeling like that, for her, that was a developmental achievement, actually. To not only be able to feel it, to allow it into awareness, but to even be able to acknowledge it was like a lot more freedom for her, actually, than her style before. Yeah. And for each of us, what more freedom in this realm looks like is going to be different. Yeah. And so I want to sit at the beginning of this, sit for us to just reflect on what freedom would look like for us. We'll set them in for some more time of practice. So finding a posture that feels comfortable. So again, settling into the body. Maybe using the breath to aid in this process. Perhaps taking some deep breaths, feeling the breath as it its effects on the whole body. Breathing in, it feels like the whole body breathes in. Breathing out, we may feel the whole body breathe out. Reflecting the role of anger in your own life. What it's bought you, what it's cost you. Worked for or against your own well-being or the well-being of others. What's your style of anger? How does it manifest in you? How do you interpret or judge or think about your own anger? actually feel some of the pain around experiences of anger. Feeling its cost. Getting clear on what your aspiration is and what, how do I want to relate to anger? What would more freedom look like for me? Maybe being more assertive, maybe more self-compassion, maybe more patience, tolerance, bearing the pain of anger without lashing out. Just reflecting on what more freedom would look like for you. In the experience of anger, we often feel very unsafe, wounded and woundable. And so it's good to have a place of resource refuge of sorts. And so you might make that resource a place in the body that gets settled and relaxed. Sometimes people use the hands or the soles of the feet. Softness of the belly. Is there a place in the body that can feel steady even if there were anger? Perhaps it's a thought, a word or phrase, an image. When I'm angry, I try to come back to the phrase that I know anger always contains a seed of delusion. It always leaves something out. I'm always partially wrong. So I come back to this. This is my reminder, this is my resource. And it's good for all of us to have a phrase or an image of an inspiring figure or an image of ourselves at peace. Place in the body. Something we can call up in the middle of intensity. Buddha said that hatred does not cease through hatred, but through non-hatred does it cease. Through love. And so who will take a stand against the destructive effects of anger? Of anger with unconsciousness rather than mindfulness. And we're here because we want to do this work. To take a few minutes to hear from you what more freedom in this realm looks like. Yeah, what came up for you? Yeah.
Just the courage you need to not know self or non-identification with the anger relationship, you know, when someone offends us or we feel like we things are not the way they should be, that might be a useful place to explore.
Yeah.
Not taking things personally, but that is very difficult in certain circumstances.
For sure, for sure.
Yeah.
One way of thinking about this is just one way, but one way I think about teachings on not self is that it's the practice of becoming unoffendable. And now that's very different from condoning harm or something. You know, we might stand very strongly against harm and still not be offended in the slightest, and that's a deep aspiration, yeah. Because you could call me lots of different names, and I'd be funny and truly unoffended. But you could call me a few names, and it would hit something, yeah? It would, like, most of the names would, like, pass through, like, space, you know? But then there are some soft spots with our hard spots, congealed places in our idea of who we are, you know? And for those things, we're willing to fight. And a lot of anger arises when those ego identifications get challenged, yeah? So we get fixated as, I am this, I'm not that. This makes me of value, and because I'm not this, I'm of value. And we get very rigid and invested about that. And the world is a big ego challenge. Have you noticed? Yeah, it will challenge who we think we are. And insofar as we have invested deeply emotionally in being this or not being that, we're vulnerable to anger, to fear, to defensiveness. We can be offended. And one aspect of meditation practice, one aspect of Dharma practice, is we pick up all the different things we think we are in some ultimate way, and we see the flimsiness of that. So the practice around that self is it's like, you know, I am this. No. I am that. No. I am not this. No. I'm not that. No. And we don't answer based on some philosophy. We actually see that there's no core there. Those qualities don't point to some core. There's no core there. And this is a really, important in, when we think about our, like, most intense episodes of anger, a lot of times we can find that there is something that we cherish in our identity that is being pushed up. And I don't think that's always what anger is, but a lot of times that's in the mix. And insofar as we can become freer and looser, more flexible in how we think about ourselves and what we are, like, we start to flow much more, you know, with it. That allows a different kind of freedom, a kind of non-defensiveness. We become more and more difficult to offend because we're not claiming things as a refuge in the same way. We're not claiming an identity as a refuge. This is a critical point you're raising. Yeah?
I was seeing how anger, when we hold on to it, we lose something. For myself, when I've been angry, I tend to kind of shut down. And my gift for words or my gift for language, I lose it. And then what I see in myself, and just an observation with others, is that holding on to anger, because that anger is a sense of loss. I mean, underneath it, there's a sense of losing something, whatever it is. And then when we're angry, and we're holding on to the anger, we lose something. And then we start, we blame that further loss onto what we perceived as the original source of our anger.
Yeah.
And so I think this is why anger can be, we can hold on to it for so long, because we're continuing to lose, and we don't see how we are the ones that are causing that loss, that further loss, and sort of blaming it on the original perceived source of our anger. Does that make sense?
It does, yeah. I was the Buddha somewhere said that anger and retribution, it's like holding on to a hot coal and trying to throw it at somebody else. Mm-hmm. And you're like, I'm getting burned. I'm like still holding on. I'm getting burned. F them. But we're still holding on. Like I'm getting burned more. And like again, you know, them. But it's like the coal is in our hand. There's that famous story about the two arrows and the Buddha uses this analogy of somebody being on a battlefield and they're shot with an arrow, and there's a surgeon there that's like ready to take out the arrow or something, and the person with the arrow on the battlefield says like, no, before you take this arrow out, I need to know the caste of the person who shot me with it. And I need to know what kind of arrow is it. Is it a flint-tipped arrow? And what is the shaft of the arrow made out of? Was it made out of this kind of, and he goes, I'm really having fun with it, And then the Buddha said, like, if you tried to answer all those questions before pulling out the arrow, you would die. This is the second arrow. And so instead of letting go of the piece of coal and regaining something, we continue down the hole of loss. Yeah, this is part of why I think that, like that quote from Shantideva, is so direct and jarring. Is like to really get our attention. Like this needs our love. Yeah.
I tend to be on the other end of the spectrum.
Yeah.
Where I grew up with domestic violence, so anger is very related to fear for me.
Yeah.
So I spent a lot of time running away from anger.
Yeah.
People's or mine.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of trying to start to think about it with love.
Yeah.
And accept the anger as more of an indicator and let it be.
Mm-hmm.
And then look at what the real situation, maybe that's the other person's issue. And then but it's okay for me to feel anger.
There's data in anger. Right? It's like it doesn't arise out of nowhere. And to be able to learn from anger, especially for those of us on the suppressing kind of side, to be able to learn from anger is really important, because it's not pure defilement. I would say that's one way. It's a weird way of putting it, but defilement is like sometimes it's talked about like the three poisons: greed, hatred, delusion. Even though I'm encouraging taking responsibility for anger, it's not purely delusion. It's not purely defilement. There's actually something to be learned, like, that's not okay. Maybe that's the lesson of anger. This is not, that behavior is not okay. And if we're really denying anger and it feels so unsafe to feel it, we don't get to learn. We can't listen. We lose out on that data. Yeah? So I know this especially like in the close relationships, in Dharma teacher-student relationships, or in the past in doing psychotherapy. If I feel angry, I know two things. Something's probably happening in the relationship that I need to attend to, and there's some delusion in my view too, because anger is never the last word. I've learned that anger is like never the last word, but something's going on, and I want to learn what that is. Yeah, does that make sense? Anger is never the last word, but it doesn't come out of nowhere. It's not all deluded. Yeah. Sometimes maybe there's some real clarity in that too. So to be able to hear that lesson of like, oh, this is important, that something's going on here, we need to be open to the anger. And anger needs to feel safe. It's an important point. Anger itself needs to feel safe. So what does that mean? We develop a kind of confidence in the heart that we can weather the storm of anger. We develop a kind of confidence like, I can feel this in all its pain, and it is pain. I can feel this in all its pain and not be totally destabilized by it and thrown off center. I can stay in my center, can stay connected to resource, and really feel it. And that when that confidence starts to develop, it's like the inner life starts to feel safer and safer. We trust the heart's capacity to feel more and more. And meditation is a practice ground for that. At first, as soon as we feel an itch on our face, right? The first time we meditate or something, that itch is like so compelling. It's still pretty compelling, right? But we think at the early, weeks, months, sometimes really years of practice, everything we feels like a commandment to do something about. Yeah. So the itch feels like a commandment to scratch. The discomfort in the knee feels like a commandment to move. The, anger feels like a commandment to lash out or lash in or do something. And part of the evolution of practice is weathering that storm of learning to tolerate that with patience and openness in a way that we develop a confidence in our own hearts. Right? The heart-mind's capacity for stability. Does it still hurt? For sure. Does it feel safe? Yeah. And so as we sit silently, this is a kind of ground for us, a practice ground for us to experiment with what can be felt. What can be felt through? What can we bear with? What can the heart open to? And as we have the experience of opening to anger, fear, sadness, delight, pleasure, ecstatic joy, all of this, as we have those experiences opening, seeing the rise and pass of that, we develop a kind of confidence in mindfulness, a confidence in our own capacity. And that makes our inner life feel safe. We normally think about safety out there, and that's important, of course, but it actually makes our inner life feel safe.
I know that oftentimes when people feel angry, they want to vent when you talk about it.
Yeah.
But the way that you described this, it almost sounds like it's more of an invitation to sit with it. And would you say that it always boils down, because you know that's so beautifully boiled down to delusion, just what you said just a moment ago, you know, so beautifully boiled down to a sense of self, and that really is very significant, I think, that so much of our anger people connect to the sense of the outraged ego, but I mean, that process of the boiling down, is there like a roadmap? I feel like a lot, because I know I sit with my anger, and it always goes to the same place.
Yeah.
I think I just took it a step further with this whole idea of a sense of self. That's a significant piece of information.
Yeah.
So would you say that if people sit with it, and it boils down, do you always see sort of something that's sort of grounded in like this, defilements, is there some consistency that you can see?
I think a lot of the ways that people talk, Dharma teachers, mindfulness teachers, therapists, do talk about anger as it always boils down to fear or loss or hurt or something. And I think that generally works, but I'm a little hesitant to go. It's sometimes, I don't want to be too reductionistic, I think it generally does work. Something that I am convinced of is that it always, anger always leaves something up. That is consistent with my experience. It always leaves something out. I'm always not seeing something. And I have a confidence that if I keep looking, the anger will change. Not that it maybe goes away entirely, but if I keep looking, there's more to be found. That's like when I was talking about resource, that's a place of resource for me, that thought. In terms of talking about it, I think it can be really, it's a fine edge, Sometimes in the therapeutic world, there's encouragement to, there have been like, the encouragement to like hit a pillow or do that kind of releasing sort of things. And Thich Nhat Hanh, who wrote a really great book that I'll get to in the second half, just called Anger, Wisdom for Cooling the Flames, he says that this is not a release of anger, but rehearsing. And I think so. Now, there are times when it's really important to talk about. I can remember it's the most angry I've been in the last decade. And it was 10 years ago. It was a supervisor who, for whatever reason, I have like, usually I'm really easy to get along with and to have not had a lot of conflict in my life at all, and something in our dynamic was like, whoa. And it was something in her triggered something deep in me, and something in me triggered something deep in her, and it was just like, Yeah, I remember for that first month of working for her, it felt like the kind of anger of like a 7-year-old not getting their whatever. You know, it was so humbling. And I was trying to practice with it for sure, and I did make it a priority in my Dharma practice, but at the same time, I needed to talk about it. I did. And I needed to be heard. But we can look, what is our intention in talking about it? Are we essentially rehearsing and justifying it? Or are we actually trying to move towards some kind of resolution? Are we, like, there'd be times when I'd be talking to, you know, to somebody, and I can remember it'd be like trying to convince them how messed up she is, you know, like, and how totally justified my anger is, and why I'm right and she's wrong. I still think I'm right. I'll tell you the end of it. It's a good ending to the story, actually. But that would be my intention some of the times. I'm right, she's wrong, this anger is justified. Yeah? And that's like one phase in talking it through. But then, you know, I'll come to you in just a sec. Then as we keep talking, and the talking sort of gets more mature in a way, you know, and we get a little bit more centered with it, what I try to do is I am trying to talk to discharge some of the feeling, but I'm also listening to the holes in my logic. Yeah? So I'm like spewing out, you know, all of that we do. But I'm also like starting to hear, like, you know, this is not an airtight case. Right? It's like, I'm not right about everything. And I can actually hear it. You know? And it's like, we listen for those gaps in our logic. We still need to discharge stuff and disclose and share, but it's like, oh yeah, I can actually get to the point where I can hear, this isn't all true. Like the chink in the armor, it's like, no, this isn't all true. And that's then an entryway. So that's a way of kind of talking and listening to oneself that's not an attempt to dig deeper into the hole of hatred, but instead to begin to see what's being left out. And there's always some. And so I can remember coming home and talking about that. And at some point, there was enough clarity that I knew I had to have a conversation with her. She was my supervisor, but I had to say, like, I had to come in and say, something is really going on between us. This is what's happening for me. I know that I've been poorly behaved in some ways, you know, just little snide, you know, sarcastic or something, you know, just like venting my aggression. I took responsibility for that, and then actually the situation really was a very good resolution. We worked for the rest of the year quite effectively with each other, but it took kind of going through the phases of just outrage and sharing that but not landing on that. You know, it's like sometimes we share the outrage and then we land on it and that's the last chapter in the story. And we're just like, and then the book's over and it's just like, oh yeah, she's whatever, he's whatever. But there's more. And if we don't keep going, we wind up with all these loose ends in our life. You know? like we, part of what we're doing is learning to tie up some of these loose ends. Like, so that was important for, I never think about her except when I teach about anger. So, and that is only because I would think about her a lot if we didn't tie up that loose end. Yeah? And so some of what we're doing is like not ending that chapter. We keep going, we keep going. And talking is part of that, talking in the form of therapy or with loved ones or in sangha, you know, in community.
So, I have so much I want to say, but I'm going to try to be ready. So I also work with children and families, and I think that in our culture, like anger, we're not really allowed to, I mean, a lot of the children that I work with aren't even allowed to know what anger is or feels like because of the invalidation of, oh, what are you crying about, or acknowledging that that's a feeling of anger, and so not even being allowed to have an idea of what that is. Invalidating it. And one of the hardest things about anger is to understand that I'm feeling angry. Do I have a right to feel angry? And then when you're seeking that information from the people around you and they're not able to help you validate that, or if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It makes it very confusing. So you struggle with suppressing it, no, it's me, or that this doesn't feel right, but no, it's me, it doesn't feel right. And it gets really, really confusing. It can be a lifelong battle of, you just want to feel justified in being wronged or feeling wronged. And we look externally sometimes to have that taken care of.
Yeah.
I think why this is so important is that ultimately we do have to understand what are our boundaries and what is safe for us and what causes anger, what's right and what's wrong, independent of the people that are around us, whether or not they validate it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You have peace with that, when you can start to make peace with that, it's either get it or you don't.
I love that. In some theories of like development, part of how we come to understand our own inner life is to have kind of appropriate mirroring, people who actually are attuned to our own inner life, but we're not so absorbed in their life that they can, that they just have totally their reaction. You know, it's like they know what you're going through, they feel that, and they can reflect it in a way that it's not tangled up with their, whatever's going on in them, It's like mirroring, but it's marked. It's marked as yours. This is yours. This is your anger. I know that. You know. A lot of what our meditation practice is, I don't think of it as we're like reparenting ourselves or going through therapy ourselves. But there are elements of that where we are. We're kind of getting a clearer, more vivid landscape of our inner life. What that is, what anger feels like, what it does to the mind, to the body, what fear feels like. Actually, to get really clear so that we have a much more nuanced understanding of what happens in us. And an understanding that is one of non-blame, like the notion of like, one, you're too sensitive or something, that phrase, like you're too sensitive, or as you said, don't cry or something, it's like that actually people get very confused, children get very confused about their inner life, about what was okay and not okay to feel. And in Dharma circles, anger can get like this bad rap where we're not supposed to feel that either, because we're all about love and metta and compassion, But it is a really, feeling is, there's no such thing as being too sensitive. Feeling arises. If it arises, we're not protesting that. Let's just sit for a moment before we break for lunch. Let's check in with the mind and body. What's the attitude of the mind? What's been evoked through our practice this morning? Just getting clear what's here now. Plan to be back at 2 o'clock in this room. Sound okay? So enjoy lunch and rest and relaxation, and we'll get started at 2. Okay, thanks.
You might mention too, the bathrooms are available in the other building too, and the washrooms over there.
What's that? No, let's talk during lunch. Yeah. Well, I mean, you don't have to talk, but it's not silent.
I need to be heard.
Just make an announcement.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I just have a quick announcement.